and welcome to another episode of the State of the Nova Nation. I'm Eugene Rapay. He's Chris Stanziel. And Chris, what a week it is. We are one of three schools to have an undefeated men's and women's basketball team. But you know what? We're the only one that stands on top in the men's poll because we are back at number one, baby.
It is crazy to think now how we kind of take this – I wouldn't say we take it for granted, but it's kind of, like, expected at this point. I remember when, like, growing up watching Villanova and, you know, seeing them, always, like, high in the polls, but they were never – they could never attain the number one ranking, the 05-06 specifically for me, when Duke was just plastered there no matter what Villanova did. But now it's crazy to see the number one right next to our name, and it happens every year now. It's great to see.
Yeah, what is this now? Our third straight season sitting on top?
Yeah, the first was our senior year, 15-16, and we've been number one ever since.
Or, well, at some point. I know what you're going for before, like, some Duke fan infiltrates the comment section or something stupid.
Yeah, trying not to start a flame war, but I'm glad you understand that.
Yeah, no, we've been doing this for a while. I know what you're trying to put up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, some other great news also is that last week, Mikal Bridges messed around, got some career numbers. We also got some career numbers here at State of the Nova Nation. God, I felt like we just beat a bunch of high scores from last year. Mikal Bridges had some personal records. The men's team has some personal records. Same for the women's team. And we have our own also. Number 66 on college and high school sports podcasts on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. And just on the Podomatic polls, we got number 71 overall, 6th best sports podcast on Podomatic, and we are the number 2 college and high school sports podcast on Podomatic. It's an exciting time, and we couldn't do without your support. Otherwise, who knows where we'd be? I'm just glad we haven't been fired.
we're still kicking, so we're doing something right.
Yeah, more people are coming back, so I guess that means we're doing something good.
That's good. And you know, having the guests on as well, they're really helping us as well.
But you know what, Chris?
Yes.
The men's team now holds the longest active streak in the AP Top 10 with 35 weeks, and the record's 40. So we're approaching it.
Wow. Well, we're right there. Barring an absolute collapse, I see us at least tying it. I mean, you got to think.
Yeah, no, I we don't want to jinx it, obviously, because it's a long season.
I know.
But it's so close yet so far, and hopefully we make it.
It's also one of those weird stats. It was kind of like Aaron Judge's strikeout record in this past baseball season. Like, oh, he struck out in this many straight games, and you're like, I didn't even know that thing existed. It's kind of like this. I had no idea that this was people were keeping track of it and that the record was 40.
Yeah, we'll definitely be keeping an eye out for that. But for now, Wildcats are the top cats once again, number one in college basketball land. 41 first place AP votes. And then the coaches poll, they received 22 first place votes. Still well ahead of the competition, most notably number two, Michigan State. And then you got Wichita State, number three. Duke dropped to number four. And Arizona State creeping in there, moving up to number five. They also snagged some first place votes. It's just great seeing Villanova back on top again. I liked how Jay addressed it. He said, we still have some work to do. But, you know, you got to imagine that. You know, when he's sitting in his office, he calls in Mike Sheridan and the team. And it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to pop some bottles.
I feel a couple of years ago that was probably the case. But now not
actually,
so much.
You're probably right.
Business. It's probably all business now. And I'm glad for that.
Yeah, probably once they climb the mountain, now it's like, oh, you know, we've been here before.
Right. And, you know, that's good. I mean, it's good to have both ends. Obviously, you want to celebrate the fact that you're number one, but at the same time, you kind of want to go about business the correct way. And as we saw this past weekend, we know exactly what to correct now. So put it behind us. We got a target on our backs now, and let's move forward.
I will say, though, for us fans, number one never gets old.
Yeah, that's for sure. And to be fair, I said a couple of weeks ago that, you know, the new number one team would be kind of like back into that spot. But Villanova, I have to say, really didn't. I mean, they came off, they beat Gonzaga this past week, and then they followed up with a relatively crappy performance against LaSalle. But they beat a high-quality Gonzaga team, so it's not like they backed into it per se. It wasn't like they were beating cupcakes and then all the teams ahead of them lost. They had a legitimate win in there.
Men's team, they weren't the only one to move on up. You got the women's poll. That also came out yesterday. And Herod Preda squad, they were 22 last week, and now they're sitting pretty at number 20, just behind Texas A&M and right ahead of Green Bay.
Yeah, they're slowly inching their way up. They're getting there. Trying to get for that top 15, I feel like. Eventually, I feel like within the next 2 weeks, if they keep this performance up, I think they can get there soon. I mean, Stanford's got 4 losses. They're ahead of them. I don't get that. A&M's got 2. Oregon State's got 2. So they can make some moves.
The other thing, too, is that they're the highest-ranked Big East team. For a little while, they were the only one in the polls, but Marquette has creeped its way back into the receiving vote section.
Yes.
But for now, I guess you could say that we're the best team of the Big East.
For one more week, you can, and that's always a good thing to say.
It's good to see both teams move up in the polls. But for now, let's look at the men's team. Villanova's 10-0. Wasn't pretty on Sunday, but we got the dub, and that's all that matters. The Wildcats won 77-68. The game was really close until about the last 4.5 minutes. Ultimately, Phil Booth got a big foul, gets sent to the line, nails 3 big free throws in a row. Then after that, Nova just gets some distance, gets some separation, and is able to hold off the evil reign of BJ Johnson and Pookie Powell. I guess I shouldn't really laugh about Pookie Powell because he did give Villanova quite a game. He finished with 12 points, 5 boards, and 6 assists. And as for BJ Johnson, he had 21 points, 6 rebounds. Sorry, 7 rebounds. And then on Villanova's end, we got a couple guys with 18 points. Phil Booth, Dante DiVincenzo coming off the bench. Jalen Brunson adding in 17. And then you have Mikhail Bridges with a quiet 10 points, 8 rebounds. Chris, what stuck out to you about this LaSalle game?
It was just very, very, very sloppy on our end. I mean, 11 turnovers, a little more than what you would like. I thought, obviously, they came out flat, losing at halftime by 1. You didn't really expect like a type of letdown game. I thought that since they were coming back home off a big win against Gonzaga, you know, Temple, you still got Temple on the schedule, so it's not like you can just sleepwalk through this and then go to finals and then take a little bit of a break. You still have another game after, so I didn't think they would be a letdown in that regard. So I didn't really like that. Again, the slow starts, and I just don't know why this still happens. I just hope that they're able to figure it out eventually, especially for Big East play. I know you highlighted Pookie Powell, but he only went 5 of 16 from the field and didn't hit a single 3, 0 of 7. So I think we might have jinxed him a little bit. I know he played okay, but his stat line suggests otherwise. I mean, obviously, P.J. Johnson, great game for him on the LaSalle side. Bridges didn't hit a 3. I thought he played his worst game of the year, but he still contributed 8 boards. So I really no issue with that. Dante with the double-double, 18-10. Little slow from the three-point line, 1-6. So, I mean, he still played okay. And then Phil Booth, obviously, as you mentioned, 18 points. And I thought he was probably Villanova's best player on the day.
I think the refs were just very whistle-happy. God, it just felt like...
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, what was the rhythm? I think that was another problem with this game, too. Like, it was just such a strange game. It was just so weird. Yeah, like, something about it, like, I felt like Nova was just not really into it yet. Like you said, they came out a little flat. They were losing at halftime.
Yes.
Granted, it was only 1 point, but that's just strange.
It's not a good look.
No. We go to the free throw line 35 times. LaSalle only goes 5 times. The amount of fouls, it was just like every like 5 minutes. God, it was just so annoying to watch. The one good thing, though, I really liked Villanova's interior passing because the threes weren't really falling that well, so it was good to see them try to get to the basket. One thing, though, Colin Gillespie, is your hand okay? Wrist, whatever that is? God, Ryan Bowman, with a little pregame scoop, saw Colin Gillespie just walking in with a sling at a team pregame event. Man, I guess that was the reason why Dante had to play for 39 minutes and 33 seconds.
Yeah, that was a pretty early bombshell. I didn't see anything in the games prior that would have suggested that he was hurt. I'm assuming that happened in practice, that injury.
I mean, yeah, it was reported in practice. And okay. He'll be out for 3 to 4 weeks.
That's great. He obviously hits the depth part of this team. Even as of right now, he seems to be a relatively good key contributor off the bench that will spare some minutes from these from these guys where you don't have Dante playing 39 minutes and killing himself in a game against LaSalle where he shouldn't be doing it. That's unfortunate. And then I just want to bring up someone, Eric Pascal. I said in the last episode I was expecting a big game from him because LaSalle really doesn't have an inside presence. And yeah, Villanova kind of figured that out eventually with all the drives to the basket and getting fouled. But Pascal didn't do anything. He had 3 points, all three of which came from the free throw line. And he didn't do anything under the basket. I think most of it, he only took 3 shots. One of them was from three, and I think the other one, he had another one from like mid-range or so. So I just wish he would just attack the basket more and realize that his strength is not shooting from the outside. Drive to the basket, attack inside, and I think he can do some big things. But again, another lackadaisical game from him, and he had 4 fouls to boot. So, I guess that probably had something to do with it since he wasn't allowed to play as aggressively.
I miss the old Eastman of the first two games of the season when he was just throwing down dunks. And we were talking about how he was going to eclipse the amount of dunks that they would have over the last like 4 or 5 years.
Really?
Just really in a slump right now. And it's really killing. I don't know what it is, whether it's mental or just I'd assume a lot of it's mental. I don't know. It's like when he's out there, I feel like the rhythm just kind of stops a little bit or slows down when he gets the ball. And I feel like there's one thing that's terrible in sports and driving. It's indecisiveness. You got to just make a decision and go with it. You can't just stand there and just hesitate. And I feel like once he gets the ball on the perimeter, it's like, okay, either pass it or do something with it. Don't just kind of stand there for a little bit. And that's something that we've seen happen in the last couple of games. It's really a bummer. As the Dobbs Ferry kid, you love to see him do well. And seeing that he's at Nova makes it even better. I have a lot of people just blowing up my phone asking what's up with Eric. Why isn't he doing that well? I thought he was going to be great for Nova. And honestly, I think this is just a slump. Hopefully he climbs out of it, but it's just looking rough out there. I will say, Phil Booth, I'm loving this game. I'm really loving what he's been doing.
Oh, yeah.
He's had a great last few 2 or 3 games. I guess it started with the St. Joe's game, and ever since then, he's been contributing very steadily. Mikal Bridges, you finally saw him come down to – he's human. He looked human out there.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it was good to see Villanova gut out a win, even when the circumstances weren't the best. They were trailing by one, wasn't really shooting well from beyond the arc. I think this would be a very big learning moment. I think one thing I liked was after the game at the post-game press conference, Jay's attitude and the guys, you know, they weren't really jumping up and down. They looked at this at like business. They looked at it as if we didn't play the best. It kind of felt like a loss. Attitude-wise, atmosphere-wise, in the press conference room. But, you know, even though they got the win, and even though we're 10-0, I think there's a lot that they can learn from this, take away from it. And honestly, it's good because they got Temple coming up, and if there's anything that you can totally expect from the Owls and the Lycura Center, it's that they're not going to have any mercy. The fans are not going to have any mercy at all. It's going to be a very hostile environment, and the Owls are looking pretty solid so far.
Yeah, I kind of like the approach Jay took after the game, treating it basically like a loss, because, I mean, obviously, LaSalle's an okay team, but you don't want to be in this type of game against them. You're much better than them. You should have blown them out of the water. This shouldn't have been a competition. You shouldn't have been losing at half. So I'm glad that Jay's able to see that and realize that, hey, we're better than this. Yeah, we won. And yeah, we toughed out a gritty game. I hate to use that term. God. But I guess that's what it kind of was. Yeah, you won it. At the same time, you got a lot to improve upon. You learned a lot about yourselves. A lot of film to review. So hopefully they're able to build upon it and make the adjustments for Temple because, like you said, hostile environment, Big Five matchup, all that stuff. So,
yeah, and we all know that Jalen loves to play the Owls. He's had a few big games so far whenever Temple is on the opposing side of the court. It's interesting. You know, you had LaSalle play pretty much shot for shot with Villanova. They shot the ball very well. And we know, we've joked about before how Jay Wright's all about coach speak, and he loves to just throw in the cliches. But he, you know, he told that like it is. And he said, one of the things he said was, quote, "We couldn't guard their guards. We were outplayed because they had a good game plan." And I don't think you see Jay pretty much admit that all that much, especially when they're winning.
No, not at all. Yeah, you're exactly right.
If anything, on the bright side, honestly, I'm just happy we avoided the upset bug. Wow, I mean, what a crazy week it was. Like,
yeah, it
especially
was.
Especially since we last signed off on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute madness between Duke, Kansas twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple others mixed in. I'm just happy that we were able to avoid that upset bug. You always thought that we would have the game in the bag, but there was just some moments where it was just like facepalm.
Yeah, it was a facepalmy type game. And usually I'd get a little bit more worked up over a game like this. I remember last year I had a rant about the DePaul game that we eventually squeaked out and how terrible, because they played so terribly in that. But with this, I don't know. I would like to get a little bit more worked up over it, but I just have a feeling that they're going to correct it, and it's not really indicative of who they really are. Now, if they come out flat against Temple and do the same thing and possibly lose that one, then I'll be a little upset.
I will say it was nice to see Josh Hart back in his old stomping grounds. He's had some big games at the Wells Fargo Center, and it was good to see him sitting courtside, dapping up a few fans, doing a little trash talk with BJ Johnson. I like it. It's all in good fun. All in good fun.
I didn't even realize he was there until after the fact. But yeah, I heard he was in a little bit of a mix-up with BJ Johnson.
Yeah, it was nothing too serious. It was just I'm sure he was just like, oh, brick. And then next thing you know, BJ Johnson makes a basket, looks his way, flashes a smile. But for the most part, it wasn't anything too crazy. I did see that one reporter, I guess, was trying to make a scene out of it. And I liked how Dante DiVincenzo responded to his questions, saying, I didn't hear anything. I don't even know what you're talking about. And it's good before, who knows, maybe he'll like say something and then it gets twisted against him. So I'm glad with the way that he handled it. But it was good to see Josh. You know,
Yeah.
I know the Lakers were back last Thursday night and they got a game against the Knicks tonight. So I guess it was good to see him hanging out, checking out his old team, dapping everybody up, showing some love. Taking pictures with fans, thin court side like a baller.
Yeah, I guess now you're a pro athlete. I guess you can do these things.
Do you think Dominic Cheek can get to sit court side whenever he wants, or does he have to buy a ticket?
No, he gets put in the last row. They'll say, oh, yeah, sure, Dominic, welcome back. Welcome back, Wells Fargo. No, this is your former home. Here, we'll direct you to your seats, and then it's the last row all the way up in 300, so. Him and Malik Wayans.
No, I feel like Jay likes Malik Wayans, honestly. He got a lot of dap after.
No, I guess you're right.
Dominic Cheek, though, man, never heard about anything about him.
Wasn't there another one in there? I think there was.
I'd say Armwood.
He was a little before their time, though. And he hit a clutch basket against, like, George Mason in some random tournament, so he's okay. Dominic Cheek was just a cancer.
But, yeah, it's good to see the Wildcats 10-0. Got another one coming up tomorrow night at 7 p.m. But before we preview that game, I think now would be a pretty good time to call up our good old friend, Brendan Riley. He was worked up all this past weekend about the Big Five, and I guess now would be a pretty good time to just talk about it, because we talked about how Andy Katz floated around that tournament idea a couple weeks back, and that was actually an idea that was not original. The Nova Raptor actually talked about that having a tournament for the Big Five, including Drexel, back in 2016. So here I was quoting Andy Katz, and meanwhile, Nova Raptor had it done years ago.
Yeah, come on, man. You got to get your sources straight.
For all we know, Andy Katz probably went on VU Hoops, saw that. Ooh. He, like, tried to dig in the archives, like, oh, maybe someone will forget about this. Like, no one will remember about this article.
Conspiracy.
Pass it off as original.
See if you can get the, what is it called? What the web address? What are those things called?
IP address?
Yes, the IP address. Yeah, see if you could get the IP address and see if you could trace it back to Mr. Cass's computer.
So yeah, there's been a lot of debate. What should we do with the Big Five? How should we change it up? Or should we change it up? Or just leave it as it is right now? I think we can all agree that I think the Big Five needs some sort of excitement to it. Whether it's, you know, tournament, whether it's round robin, just something to just make it more exciting and fun for all the fans and all the people involved. And Brendan's got some ideas. He's got some really passionate ideas, and he's been stewing on this all weekend, and he's been brewing up an article about it. We're going to call him up, see what his thoughts are about it. What should we do with the Big Five? What does he think about the Big Five? And ultimately, his suggestions and his opinions on how we can make it better.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Brendan, what's up? Welcome back to the State of the Nova Nation. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. We've had a few days now to get over whatever it was that we saw on Sunday. hey, we're 10-0. That's if you told me that we were going to be 10-0 to start the season, I don't think I would have cared how we got there.
A win is a win. You just released this piece on the Big Five. Your thoughts. We've had a lot of conversations off wax. Should we change the Big Five? What should we do with it? How should Villanova treat it? Should we make it a tournament? Should we keep it round robin? What is your opinion on the current state of the Big Five?
So I've had a lot of conversations this weekend, and a lot of people have some great ideas, you know, move it to a tournament, you know, maybe only play the top one or two teams from the Big Five each year. And for those ideas, I want to say no, because that's the most idiotic, stupid thing Villanova could do ever. I see no reason whatsoever to get out of the same, at least, format of round robin that Villanova's in. And there are so many reasons why. My favorite are the few that I say in the article, where people come up to me and say, oh, well, you know, Villanova's just so much better than these other teams. My initial reaction is just like, oh, I'm sorry. Do we win too much? Is that the problem here? If we win the Big Five again this year, or the Big East again this year, should we leave that too? Like, oh, Kansas should have left the Big 12 like 6 years ago. They're winning far too many times. Who would like to do that? It's just ridiculous.
So for the people who want the tournament format, why would that not work? I know you did a little bit of reading into it, a little bit of research. Why would a tournament just be impossible?
It's not that it would be impossible. The basic rundown of how early season tournaments work is that all schools are allowed to play up to, I think it's 28 or 29 games. And then if you're in an exempt tournament, you're able to play up to 31. Now, Villanova plays in one of these every single year. Battle for Atlantis was the one that we did this season. You can play in more than one of them in a season, which I actually thought you couldn't. You can, but those additional tournaments can't be counted as exempt, so all the games have to count. And the other part about it is, and I think this only counts for the exempt tournaments, but I have to do a little more research into it. I think you can only play in the same event once every 4 years, which is why Villanova switches up where it goes every year. But the main reason I wouldn't want to see a tournament is because I love that Villanova plays all four of these games and that you're going to get these four games every year. And the reason I love it is because, despite what people think, they're good games. And I'm not just saying they're competitive on the court, or like LaSalle did to us, they were able to stick with us. They're good teams. The exception to the rule was last season. Last season, everyone was rebuilding, and the Big Five was legitimately off of its normal base. It was the first time in the Jay Wright era that all four other Big Five teams were ranked outside of the top 100 in the RPI at the end of the season, when you're looking at, you know, possible NCAA berths. But before that, the Big Five had been getting two teams into the NCAA tournament like almost every year. In fact, they had had two top 75 teams each of the last six seasons. In the last three seasons before 2017, they had had two top 40 and RPI teams. And people forget, 2012 was not that long ago. And in that season, Villanova finished dead last in the Big Five. Yeah, they've won the last four, but before that, LaSalle and Temple split it. Before that, St. Joe's and Temple split it. These are good teams that have good schedules, and while we are on an unprecedented run, and I absolutely love just being the kings of the Big Five, it's not going to last forever. And thinking that the way it is right now is the way it will always be is mind-boggling to me.
So how did you come up with the inspiration to write this article?
So a good friend of mine, I don't know if he wants his name out there, so we'll call him by his VU Hoops handle of Nova Raptor. We were having a kindly debate on Thursday evening. Possibly some Mike's Hard Lemonades were involved. He's a big proponent of the tournament. He wants to have more of an event. And I still like having all four of the games. I think it's better for Villanova's schedule, especially now with the way that the NCAA selection committee is going to be looking at us as a quad system, as opposed to just looking at the top 50, 100, 150 RPI. And for those of you that haven't read the article I put out there on this, it basically means they're also going to be taking into account where the game gets played, not just who the opponent was. So in our two away games in the Big Five, that's really going to help us. But the thing I do like about the tournament is that it's more of an event. And I think that's what the Big Five is missing. The reason the Big Five became so big when it started and grew in popularity is because they would have doubleheader events in the Palestra that people would go to and get to see two really good games. And I think that event mentality is what we need to bring back to the Big Five. Obviously, you're not going to get that for every single game. But ideally, in my mind, the first game of every season would be the Big Five Classic or the Big Five Showcase. And you have all five of the Big Five teams go down to the Wells Fargo Center, and it's a full-day event. Get the alumni societies involved and have them compete in like a chili cook-off or something. Put tents and festival-like atmosphere and games and stuff in the parking lot and involve Xfinity Live and make it a huge event in that whole area to try to get not just the colleges but the city involved. And the way you would run it is the – four of the teams would play each other, and those would be the second and third games. And then the first game would either be rotate every year between the five of who gets the outsider game, and either we bring in Drexel and finally let them be a part of this, or we try to see if we can get every year a big-name opponent, a Michigan State, a Duke, a UNC, a Kent, someone big to come in and start the year that all the other Philly schools are just going to try to root against. Because it's the first game out there, and Philadelphia schools, I'm very much like this with my close friends and brothers and stuff. I hate them. I want to beat them in every single game that I play against them. But if someone else is going to come in and mess with my with my family or my friends, like, I want to see them go down. I think that would bring a huge, much-needed boost to the excitement level for these games and to the popularity of the Big Five. I think it's something that's been lost in recent years because we just play at each other's venues and it's one-off games. If we could make it back into an event the way it used to be, I think that would be an amazing thing and something that would be uniquely Philadelphia.
So, Brendan, when me and Eugene talked about this a couple weeks ago, I was pro-tournament. Eugene seemed to be pro-tournament. So what would you say to the pro-tournament people like myself where we would say, hey, we can still play, you know, a St. Joe's and a Temple who might have a good year in a tournament-type style, or maybe even, like you said, one of those random teams to bring in and still improve our non-conference, but we're also freeing up 2 to 3 games. What would you say to that as a counter argument?
So two things. One, you're not guaranteed to play the better of the teams in the Big Five each year. You might end up, think, look at the battle for Atlantis this year. We ended up playing the quote unquote lesser teams. Now that might have worked out for us because Tennessee looks to be much better than they were. But the tournament doesn't guarantee you having those better games. And it especially doesn't guarantee you it's now going to be looked at as a neutral court or a home court. You're not going to get that away court advantage to boosting up the level of these games, which is now very important to the NCAA selection committee. So you're limiting yourself a little bit in what Villanova does better than most elite programs, which is going and playing away during the non-conference. So I don't want to lose the away games. The next part of that is, okay, so let's say we only play 2 games in a tournament. That frees us up 2 more games to play other people. I know people say, oh, I don't want to play these cupcakes. You know, there's too much of a risk there that there's not enough reward. I look at that and I say, okay, well, first off, I get that there's a risk. If we had lost to LaSalle, that would have been a bad loss. But winning against LaSalle doesn't mean nothing. This team is going to take away a lot from this game. Today in the press conference, Eugene, you were saying it sounds a lot like the team is, you know, there are things that we needed to do better. There are things that we now need to work on. The team is going to be able to rally around this and use this as a, you know, there was all this talk about maybe we'll be ranked number one. We can't get sucked into that. We need to stay focused on playing Villanova basketball and playing each game as if it's against the top teams in the country. It doesn't matter who we're playing. Scheduling is hard. People make it seem easy that, oh, you know, we'll just go schedule a mid-tier Big Five or Power Five school to come in. And it doesn't always work that way. You usually need to get a lesser school. And I don't understand how people that will complain about some no-name school that we bring in to face us and not want to play a school that we've been facing for decades. Like, I know these aren't our classic rivalries, and I know these aren't, with the exception of, you know, St. Joe's, of course, they're not the Big East rivalry. It's not Georgetown. It's not what Syracuse used to be. It's not what UConn, I'm hoping, will be for the next 3 years. But I love beating Temple. I think LaSalle plays us harder than any school we play ever. And the fact that we get to play at the Palestra against Penn every other year is so freaking cool. Like, I'm excited to possibly be able to go out to Fog Allen next year to see that game, because it's one of those places you have to see in basketball. Villanova plays regularly in one of the places that you have to see in college basketball. Like, it's a big draw both for fans and for recruits, and it's not something I'm ready to let go of.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brendan, in that the Big Five definitely needs something to change, whether it's the round robin or the tournament. I really like your idea of the triple header. Obviously, you know, you get the whole city there, and I like your idea of getting an outside school to come in. I think that adds to a little more of the fun element, and also just kind of helps bring in even some outside fans. So now you have the whole city, five schools, plus a sixth school who could be from who knows where.
Yeah, plus we all get to still feel superior to Drexel, and who doesn't love that?
There's just some lonely dragons that just really want to be a part of our exclusive club.
They can be in the intramurals. We gave them that.
Do they have the, you know how for the Big East they have like the managers tournament? Do they have one for the City Six that Drexel's in?
Yeah, but they get to be the refs. That's all they get to do.
So what do you say to the people who are like, oh, but can't you see that Villanova's going in another direction and Temple's in another, are the only ones that seem to be going upwards and everyone else is staying down below? I know you brought up recency bias, but what do you say to the people who think that we're trending upwards at a point where we're going to just be too high eventually for the rest of the schools in the Big Five?
I say to them, you know, I would love to think that the run that we're on, and that many have started to note that they think might be not maybe the end, but maybe on the downturn of, but Villanova has been on an incredible run the past 5 years. It really has. But those don't last forever. I mean, you look at some of the places, some of the achievements that we're at right now, like, oh, we've been in the top 25 for, only Kansas has been in it more than us, or, oh, we've been to the NCAA tournament this many years, and look at all these teams that haven't. Well, you look at some of these other teams, and like, look at Kentucky this year. Kentucky is a blue blood elite program that's still ranked, but is generally regarded as having a down season. UNC missed the NCAA tournament with that in the last decade. They're as blue blood and traditional and elite program as you can possibly get. These things don't last forever. And just because they make a dip doesn't mean they don't come back. Villanova got off to a great start with Jay Wright. He had a little bit of a dip and he came back. That doesn't mean it's never going to happen again. Happened to Syracuse. It happened to Duke. It happened to Kansas. It happens to these teams. And thinking that it would never happen to us is foolish. So what I would say is, just because it's not going to happen to us, it certainly happens with the rest of the Big Five. St. Joe's was an elite team for two or three seasons. And that went away a bit. And then guess what? It came back. People forget that in 2014, they were a top 40 RPI team that went to the NCAA tournament and probably should have gone further than they actually did. 2016, they were a top 20 team. Iowa beat them barely. I think it was in overtime too. And then of course they would have lost to us. But the point is that these programs aren't dead. They might not have the runs that we do. And they certainly is because they don't have the coaching we do. But that doesn't mean that they're not capable of becoming top 25 teams, of having these elite level runs and being the kinds of teams that can push Villanova. We still have not won the Big Five. We have clinched at least a share of it, but we get Temple at Temple on Wednesday. I know that I hate the RPI. I use it a few times, at least as the end of year number, because the NCAA tournament does. But right now, the RPI has Villanova at 5 and Temple at 6. This is not a bad Temple team. LaSalle beat Temple, and they almost beat us. Temple is going to come at us hard, and they're going to be the ones that want to finally end the streak. Like, don't kid yourself. The Big Five teams want to end our streaks. They want us to lose, and they each want to be the ones to do it. And Temple could. We had come out with another poor shooting game. Temple's at home. They could really do some damage. So I would just say to for the original question is, while Villanova has been able to maintain a very, very high level of success, it doesn't mean that the rest of the Big Five doesn't make these peaks and isn't coming back. 2017 was an outlier season in which it was the first year ever that four teams were outside of the top 100 in the RPI. I don't see it happening again anytime soon.
You know, Brendan, as of 2 weeks ago, when I saw Andy Katz's tweet, which ended up being a rehash of Nova Raptors' idea, which, by the way, if no one ever saw it, I highly recommend going into the archives, looking up Nova Raptors' take on why we should have a Big Five tournament. It was a very entertaining article and very entertaining read.
I've got a link in it to it in my article, along with some of his other stuff. If you guys ever want to tweet at someone or get someone back to writing, I've linked a couple of his articles in mine, and that he's a funny dude. We got to get him back onto stuff. Absolutely check out his stuff on How to Student section, and another one on some suggestions for alternate Villanova jerseys.
I did read the How to Villanova Student section. That one's also good. But yeah, I was on the tournament train, but you know what? I'm sorry, Nova Raptor. I think Brendan's convinced me. I am all for the round robin and the triple header. I like that idea a lot, and I like that we're making it an event. It wasn't so much teams being competitive. It was just really more of the double headers, the triple headers at the Palestra, getting the whole city to pack one building and getting them all hyped. And I am back. I'm on Team Brendan. I think that the round robin format is good. It just needs a little modification, but you know what? You've sold me, and it's not worthless, and it is totally recency biased.
I'm glad I could get one convert, because I don't know how many I'm going to pull onto my side.
I'm sorry, Brendan. You bring up a great point, but I like the tournament idea just a little bit too much. But I do like your idea of bringing out in another outside team. That, I think, is a great idea. I don't want Drexel.
Oh, we can't. If we're doing a tournament, you can't bring in an outside team. Because the one time that we bring in an outside team and they win our tournament, that is going to be very bad.
Oh, who cares?
Philly versus the world.
Yeah. We bring in Nebraska and they win the Big Five. That's not going to look good.
I think we can run that risk. That's okay. That's all right.
Brendan, thanks for your time. Once again, please check out Brendan's article on VU Hoops. It's worth a read. And also some Nova Raptor stuff if you want the other side of the coin. Highly recommend. Brendan has been very passionate about this idea, and I'm glad to see that it came out on a nice, cohesive article.
Thanks, guys. If anyone else wants to read more of my stuff, you can check me out at at Brendan Riley 37. You guys were pondering what that meant last time. That was my number when I played lacrosse back in high school. So that's where the 37 number comes from.
I like it. I like it. I still use my football number for all my passwords.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
You too, Brendan. Thank you. Once again, that was Brendan Riley. I'm sure you all know him. He's a VU Hoopster regular. He's always talking, and I think this is now his third appearance on the show. Third?
Chris? Yeah, let's see. Non-conference preview definitely had one of the first games of the year, and now this one. Yeah, third.
Oh, I think he now leads the league in guest appearances on the show.
He does. He does. Yeah, no, I think he's the only one who's appeared more than once.
Really?
I think so.
I thought we had Chris Lane on here twice.
I thought we just had him for the Big East preview.
Oh, yeah, that was just such a long episode that I guess it felt like two episodes.
I guess if you want to count it as a twice.
We need to get him back on here one day.
Yeah, we do. We need everyone back on here.
So, Wildcats take on Temple tomorrow night, and if there's something that we have learned about Temple so far, it's that Shiz Alston Jr. can really shoot the ball. He is a sharp shooter, as they say.
Yeah, shooter shoot, man.
17.3 points per game and an unwieldy 53.5% from deep. And it's not like one of those inflated stats where it's like, oh, he only shot the ball 11 times. No, he loves shooting it. He loves taking off from deep.
Yeah, this isn't a small sample size at all. This is a legitimate three-point shooter. 23 of 43 right now. That's an insane number. And he's 25 of 26 from the free throw line. Good for 96%. That's just as impressive, I feel like.
Yeah, him and Quentin Rose are at the forefront of this 6-2 Owl squad that will be looking to bring the heat tomorrow night on their home court. Quentin Rose, just an inside presence, also averaging 17 points per game. Can shoot it once in a while, but he's more of like an inside guy. And then you also have Obi and Echionia. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes, just in time for Star Wars on Friday. Can't wait.
Obi-Wan Kenobi and Echionia averaging a cool 12 points per game, 6 boards per game. He's another inside guy. But one thing that's interesting, it's good to see Josh Brown back for the Owls. He sat out last year with an injury that just kind of derailed his whole season. This year he's healthy, and he's the point guard that kind of makes everyone go. He's not scoring as much as everyone else, but he's doing his job. He's doing what he needs to do.
Yeah, solid contributor, just under 9 points per game, just under 4 boards, 3 assists. Yeah, he's contributing, and obviously coming off an injury last year, you don't expect him to come out guns blazing, but when you got those other three guys, you don't think you need to contribute as much, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. We worried about Pookie Powell last time. And BJ Johnson, what is your thought, what is your mood about this Temple Owls team?
I don't think they'll lose, but I think Temple's going to give them a game. I think they will. At Temple and the way Villanova played against LaSalle, very, very concerning. But if there is one thing Villanova does well, it is bounce back. And if they do have a bad game, the next game is pretty solid, at least from what I've seen in past years. And so far this year, if we can chalk up as any of the past games as down games. If this was at Villanova, I would say they would run away with this. But I don't know, man. Temple always is a tricky, tricky game. Shiz Alston Jr., if he gets hot, kind of like how LaSalle did the other day, if they were knocking down threes left and right, if Shiz gets loose and gets open and he starts knocking them down, they might keep up with us. A little uneasy right now, but I still think Villanova wins around 8 to 10 points.
Yeah, if scores and recent scheduling and history has helped in any way, the Owls did lose to LaSalle at LaSalle by 4. They also lost to George Washington, but they also beat St. Joe's by 3, and we all know what happened when we played St. Joe's. That was worth earth. There was, like, no survivors.
No, that's for sure. They also beat Wisconsin. I know they're on a down year, but that's still an impressive win, I feel like, for them. Also beat Clemson, Auburn.
Yeah, and I saw them also beat South Carolina at the Garden a few weeks back. At the Under Armour reunion. That was surprising because it was all Temple, all game. And you know how Frank Martin is with his Gamecocks. They're all about defense. And it looked like Temple had no problem whatsoever just doing whatever they wanted.
Yeah, they just beat a Final Four team from last year. I mean, it's impressive regardless of who graduated, who transferred, whatever it may be.
Granted, Harry Potter villain Sindarius Thornwell was no longer on the team. I thought they still did a pretty good job.
Yeah, for sure. What do you got about this game? What are you feeling?
I'm feeling Nova comes back, and I think, yeah, like you said, I mean, it's not going to be easy, but we all know how Jalen Brunson feels whenever he plays Temple. I don't know what it is. Man just has a game, and I think he'll ball out. Mm-hmm. And then I think we'll see Mikal Bridges follow his lead, get back to his play, because I don't think 10 points, a quiet game, 4-for-10 on the floor, I don't think that's going to happen again. It'll be a game. I think it'll be one of those things where it's like close in the beginning, and then all of a sudden we're going to drop a few threes here and there, and then you blink, and before you know, we're up 10. And then I think we'll win maybe by at least 9 points. I say Nova by 9+.
Okay, so literally right in the middle of my range there. Perfect. All right, good to know we're on the same page there.
Yeah, I just don't see the Wildcats sleeping 2 games in a row.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I'm kind of glad the LaSalle game happened the way it did.
And I think Jay Wright has them running extra suicides after that game.
Yes. Lots of extra ball protection drills and whatever, maybe better passes and whatever. But yes, the running is definitely at the forefront of whatever practice they're going through.
Once again, tip-off is at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. You can catch the game on ESPN2. Don't go on Fox Sports 1. It's actually on ESPN2.
Good.
Yeah, it's not every day that we get ESPN talking about us. But they've been doing it a lot lately. I don't know if you watched any of the games over the weekend.
I did.
But literally, in a bunch of them, it was just like, I didn't know where. Villanova was a really good team.
Yeah.
Best team I've ever seen. I'd say, what?
Yeah. Yeah. No. You're exactly right. It was during the BC Duke game. They kept talking about it. And when they cut this Seth Greenberg, he kept saying, like, oh, you know, Villanova's the most complete team out there. And it's only because we played Gonzaga a couple of days ago on ESPN. If that game was at Fox Sports 1, or if they had just played any other rando team, they would have never had any idea that we were good.
Yeah, they're like, Duke is talented, but Villanova's the most complete team.
Yeah, I mean, backhanded compliment, don't you think, a little bit? They're like, oh, Duke has the most talent, but Villanova's most complete. Like,
and then you have them talking about, Jalen Brunson's the best point guard I've ever seen in college basketball. And it wasn't just the Duke game also. I was watching Oklahoma State, and I watched a cup, another one, I forgot who, but literally, like, I don't know where, just pulling out Villanova as if they've been covering them, like, in the last 5 years.
Yeah, well, that's what ESPN does. They just hop on the hype train until it comes crashing down, and then they're like, oh, see, we predicted it. See, this is why we can't have it.
No, I'm taking it the other way with this. I think it's great. I think it's good to see them talk about us. I don't know who we got to infiltrate them, if it was Mike Sheridan or, you know, some Fox Sports 1 people, John Fanta from Big East Shootaround. I don't know who it was, but whoever did it, they did their job.
Oh, no, I'm definitely all for it. More press, the better.
So we got Nova beating Temple?
Yes.
Great. I'm glad we can agree on that. We don't have a women's preview because they are taking a 10-day break for finals and exams. Good for them. I mean, they're 9-0.
Yep.
They took care of business on Sunday also playing a Big 5 team. They played Temple. They went down to McGonagall Hall. They won 69-65.
Fun fact. Villanova women's basketball, 9-0 for the first time since the 1979-1980 season. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while, over 3 decades, almost 4, about to be 4.
Yeah, oh, that's weird to think about. Don't bring that up. that's a long time. But hey, got there eventually, and that's all that matters.
So it was a pretty balanced effort for the Wildcats. They had 4 players go into double figures. You had Adriana Hahn lead the way with 19 points. Alex Illumin added 15. Megan Quinn with 12. And Janet Tucker with 10. And it was weird because, you know, it was kind of like how we previewed. It was like a team effort versus Taniya Atkinson. And we, you know, we were hyping her up, how she's like dropping 23 points per game, averaging like 10 boards. She's just like this guard-forward combo that just gets buckets, gets boards, just a machine.
Yes.
And Atkinson had a great game, too, in her right. She had 24 points and 18 rebounds. But once again, Villanova just found a way to just hold on. Once they took the lead to start the fourth quarter, that was it from there. They were able to hold on. Atkinson pulled off a nice little rally at the end. But ultimately, the Wildcats did enough just to win. And this was a good game, Chris. It was a back-and-forth game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great test for these young cats.
Yeah, it was. And this win, you can chalk it up to the comeback variety. Down by 4 at the end of 1. And you're able to take back the lead second quarter. Third quarter, points-wise, was tied. You're still leading. And then in the fourth quarter, you were able to jump out to, I believe it was a 10-point lead. Yeah, 61-51 with 5:58 remaining in the fourth. And then able to hold on. And that was what something we were saying. If they're just able to hold on in the fourth quarter and not collapse like they kind of had been in the past couple games, providing some scares, then this team should be in A-OK shape. And that's exactly what they did. They hit their free throws down the stretch. Adriana Hine with two clutch free throws toward the end. Actually hit 3 of 4 in total toward the end there, preventing any type of tempo comeback. So yeah, you got to be happy with that. Yeah, it was a 10-point lead, and yeah, they only ended up winning by 4. But at the same time, I mean, you got to be happy with the ability to actually stave off any type of tempo rally.
Yeah, the other thing too, like we talked about, you know, even when the shots aren't falling, they're going to give a great defensive effort. And Tania Atkinson, yeah, she had all those points, but it was just all volume. 9 for 23 on the floor. Like, they did ultimately a great job of just locking down on her. Mm-hmm. I guess at that point, when you shoot the ball that much, you're bound to get your buckets eventually.
Right.
But yeah, it was like 4-on-1, and ultimately the team won. Just wasn't enough of an effort for her to just carry everybody. Pretty hard when you're doing that, but like we talked about, just another great all-around performance. Defense first, then offense came later. And the Wildcats are now 9-0 going into this little break that they have.
Yeah, I just want to kind of build upon that Atkinson point with you mentioned with Temple. I know, like you said, it was all volume with her, and she pretty much was their only option on the day. She had no help whatsoever. I mean, Davis had 13 points, but other than that, no one breached double digits. Three-point shooting as a team, 4 of 20. That's not good at all. I mean, you're not going to win many games with that type of shooting, and 25-71 from the field. Again, that's just not the best look. And again, Villanova did get out-rebounded in this game a little bit. Temple got 49-17 of the offensive variety, and Villanova only collected 37. So again, we always kind of knew that rebounding was an issue with Villanova. But at the same time, if you're still able to hit your late free throws, still be able to control the ball late, I think the rebounding differential really won't affect you as bad.
Yeah, what the Wildcats get beaten up for on the boards, they definitely make up on defense and with their shooting. But now they're going to take a 10-day break for end-of-semester exams. They're going to resume action on December 20th when they head over to Tom Gola Arena to play LaSalle. Tip-off is scheduled for 1 p.m. We're going to get back to that later once the game gets closer. Chris, I don't know if you've ever been there, but let me tell you, Tom Gola Arena, once again, people rag on the Pavilion for being a high school gym. I covered LaSalle Drexel a couple of years back, and that was the first time I had ever been in there. And that is the glorified high school arena. It's worse than Hagen. At least Hagen looks nice, but Tom Gola Arena, I don't know. I don't even know if it's like historic. I don't even know what their deal is, but it just wasn't that nice.
Really? Yeah. I no idea. Wow. No amenities, no concessions, nothing.
There are a few, but like just the whole layout is just so strange.
Is it? Is it on their campus?
I'd assume so. I'll be honest. I like.
You just kind of showed up.
Yeah, I just showed up. Yeah, like it was weird. I like put it into my GPS and I said, I'm here with media, and then they didn't believe me. They denied me parking. Thankfully I had someone call in, and then I was able to go out there and then parked, made my way in. First time ever there. Would have totally been lost. But yeah, that place is literally a glorified high school arena.
Unbelievable. What's with the big five and glorified high school arenas? Do we know?
Yeah, outside of Temple.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And Penn.
True.
It's that time of the day where we now open up the mailbox, look at what tweets and letters we got from you, the fans and the listeners out there. Got a couple, got a few actually, a few repeats, but you know, hey, the more the merrier. First question is from Mike Jacobs, and he wants to know, Jay Wright says that Villanova plays for the name on the front of the jerseys and not on the back. Then why have the names on the back?
Great question. You know, you see some of these lower budget schools, they don't have the names on the back. But I think that's just because they can't afford them, and it's not because of their whole mantra. But why do we have the names on the back then? If that's our attitude type ordeal, what say you, Eugene?
That's a great question by Mike Jacobs. I mean, hey, we could do? We could just do it like we did, I don't even remember what the exact name of the classic or doubleheader was called, But when we went down to Hawaii and we played Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor, and they just put intangibles on the back, like respect, attitude. Like, I think Jay would love that. I think Jay would be all for that kind of stuff.
Oh really? Because those jerseys are forever cursed because it caused a 30-point loss that night, obviously. It was all the jerseys' fault.
I guess you would say that was the last time that they ever did anything like that.
Yes, and it probably should be the last time considering the outcome of that game.
Okay, if you could change, like, let's say they don't have names on the back, what would you change it to?
And you had to put something there?
Yeah, if you had to put something there.
Nicknames.
J-Swiss for Jermaine Samuels, Dada for Cosby Roundtree, O-Boogie for Spellman.
That's great. Pterodactyl. I'd like to see pterodactyl spelled out on bridges. That'd be great.
Booth. You could just have like Booth.
Or the Booth Fairy, as we famously quipped a couple years ago.
See, I'd be all for shoot 'em up, sleeps in the streets on the back of the jerseys. That'd be so
that's
sick.
That's another good one. Yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool. Yeah, no, it would be.
It'd be a little long. Maybe just do like one line on the top and then do the number and then do the second line on the bottom. But yeah, I think they can make it work.
Oh, that's possible. Or maybe just the first letter of each word there. What would the abbreviation for that be?
S-E-U-S-I-S.
S-E-U-S-I-S.
Oh, wait, no, there's a T in there for sleep in the streets.
Would you put the T in there for the? I don't know.
I guess not. I guess we don't put the T in S-O-N-N.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So if you're looking toward us. So we should pitch that. Come up with a jersey concept. If anyone wants to draw anything, please go do so and then tweet it at us.
The other question from Mike Jacobs is there any rhyme and or reason to when the squad wears the 85 throwbacks? I can't find any patterns or consistent formulas, but there is one that sticks out to me, and it's whenever we play Georgetown. I think that's when we debuted them also, and honestly, we've destroyed Georgetown every time we wear the throwbacks, and we also get to rub it in their faces a little bit more about what happened on that fateful night in 1985.
Yes, it is the ultimate troll job, and especially with this year with Ewing coaching, I feel like it's going to even be more trollier.
He's still very bitter about that loss. Like, he hates us.
He is. Yeah, no, you wouldn't think so. Like, even, like, in, like, his, like, Nick documentaries, he brings it up, and it's like, dude, come on.
Yeah, literally every documentary where he's asked about it or he talks about it, he's very bitter.
Yeah, he is. Like, you lived a full, complete NBA life. You went to two NBA finals. Like, come on.
Yeah, people consider you one of the best around at your position, and here we are. I mean, I guess he's still holding on to those college years. Another question is from Chris Lane. How bad are we?
I don't think we're that bad. I think we're pretty good. I think we're number one, right? That's what the polls say.
We are number one, but yeah. I would say if there was any room for improvement, it would be that we get Denny Grace, Peyton Heck, Matt Kennedy, and
Tom Liebig.
I literally just had it too. I was like, God, there are four this year. It's too many.
Yes, I know. Yeah,
we need to get them all minutes every game. That's the only way I can see this improving, which means if they're getting minutes, that means we did something very good that game.
That is very true, and it should have been this weekend as well. This should have been one of the games where they get their minutes in, but no.
Next questions are from our guy, Jerry Quinn. What will be the impact of Collins' injury? Will he be ready for Big East games when they start later this month?
Well, I think we kind of hinted at it before. The impact is that the depth is going to take a hit, and you're going to have these guys, specifically, well, this past game, Dante, playing minutes, a little bit of extended minutes, and they're going to be, you know, a little tired, a little dragged out. And, you know, it in this early in the season, it's really not that big of a deal. You still got a long ways to go, so they can get their rest in. But at the same time, you really don't want Dante playing 39 minutes against the South.
39 and 33 seconds.
Right. Oh, yep. Sorry. He basically played the entire game, and you really don't want Jalen Hill himself, Bridges. It goes down the line. It affects minutes across the board. So that kind of sucks. But you said it was a 3 to 4 week injury, so he'd probably be back around. I guess that puts him at mid January. So right when Big East play starting to pick up.
Yeah. I mean, he can. You know, we won't need him for DePaul.
Right.
I'm sure he was a little bummed because I'm sure he like circled down on his calendar. He's like, oh man, this one I get some extended minutes. Maybe get some numbers.
That is true. That is true. He would get some extended minutes in it. And I guess I don't know if it would affect him from a development standpoint. I guess it would. Because, I mean, that's 3 to 4 weeks of actual game time you're not going to be able to play.
Yeah, and you know, he was starting to cook. He's pretty much our main freshman off the bench, not named Amir Cosby-Rountree. And Jay loves him. The crowd loves him. But, yeah, we're definitely going to see more Dante, more Amir Cosby-Rountree, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But we also saw Jermaine Samuels get some early minutes. Jay put him out in the first half.
And then that was it.
Yeah, I thought that meant like, oh, well, I guess it's time for him to grow up now. Let's see what he's made of. And then I guess Jay was like, no, he's not ready yet.
It's almost like he might redshirt or something.
You know, Chris, I know you said it. And if you didn't take it back, that would have been the boldest hot take because, honestly, it's not too far off.
I mean, I don't think he's going to redshirt at this point.
I don't think he's going to redshirt, but like,
if
I guess he might as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you might as well just to do me a little favor. But I already chickened out of the stupid hot take, so whatever.
Yeah, yeah, people started giving you the heat.
yeah, I deserved it though. It was right. It was. I deserved every bit of that. But it is kind of funny how this is kind of happening. I mean, it's not funny. I'd like to see him succeed, but you get my point.
Hey, the guy who put Georgetown in his AP poll. You know what else he did that people thought was a little outrageous?
What?
He put Arizona State pretty darn high. And that was before the Kansas game. So I guess for one thing that he did that was absolutely ridiculous, he was also a savant in the other end.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to the State of the Nova Nation podcast. Please remember to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or on Podomatic. You have options. Don't forget to check out the site, viewhoops.com. We got all the news, analysis, previews. We're gonna have some stuff for the Temple game tomorrow. Also, check back on Brendan's article. Please highly recommend. And also all the links in that article. Please follow us on social media at viewhoops. That's good for Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me, Eugene Rapay, at eRapay5.
And you can follow me, Chris Stanziel, at the Stansman on Twitter.
Nova Nation, happy Tuesday. Let's beat some owls. And no matter what happens, always remember, we are number one.